Downtown Houston and be able to provide meals for 12 hungry volunteers. Again, that's 713-526-4000 for more information. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpfthouston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to Technology Bites. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Afflicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Grufus.
Had to copy Afflicted.
We all want to be like Afflicted.
Yep.
So our showing up at the last minute and not being ready has paid off when... getting peed on the Skype.
Evidently, my computer rebooted itself at some point, so it's starting up completely blank.
Wow. Awesome. All right, welcome to the show while we work out the bugs and the glitches trying to get Peter Hughes on the Skype from San Antonio. I'll tell you about some other things you might want to know about the show. Visit us online at www.geekradio.com. That is our website. You'll see a big announcement there because we are not having a Houston Geek Gathering in August because hosts of the show will be traveling to Las Vegas for the biggest geek gathering in the world, DEF CON 22. So if you are in Vegas, look around for the Technology Bites hosts and they will give you something for free.
Oh, really?
Just put this USB stick in your laptop. And
there you go.
We've got
come to the Technology Bytes smartphone charging station.
There you go.
All your data belong to us.
Just turn on your Wi-Fi and step away.
That's one thing I have to look forward to. I'm not actually going to DEF CON this year, so I don't have to worry about securing all my electronics from hackers.
You can post and be like, ha-ha, ha-ha. I can post.
I can use the internet. Deeter. All right, so geekradio.com is the place to go to learn all about the show. You can also hang out with us in IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, in the channel Tech Bytes. It is the show within the show, and there's all kinds of people hanging out in there. You can say whatever you want. It's not FCC regulated, and it's not bandwidth throttled, because it's all just text anyway. So next thing you know, we'll have the Technology Bytes Usenet group. Why don't we have our own Usenet group? We should have our own Usenet group.
I think we need to have our own dial-up service with bulletin boards.
Hey, you know there's one for sale.
Yeah. We could assume control of HAL PC, and it'll be two dying technology resources.
Hey, it's like AOL and Yahoo.
Yeah, so there's Pete. Hey, Pete.
About the billions. Hello, I'm Peter Hughes.
Welcome to the show. So we're going to be with you until 10 o'clock tonight. Again, no geek gathering coming. You can go to cons if you want to and hang out. I'm not, you know, some people might show up. They might be there. You can hang out even though we're not there. I know that our two principal hardware people, Barrett and KD5, are going to be in Vegas, so there won't be a ton of our.
We're going to have, a handful. I want to say three or four of the people that regularly attend Geek Gatherings will probably be there in Vegas with us, too.
So there'll be Geek Gathering West.
It'll be the mother load. So who else?
Well, call me on names.
That guy with the, and what's his face? Yeah, I understand.
The dude with the thing that he brings every time.
I'm trying to think of who, because I only.
Oh, you know them, and I do too. Of course, now that I'm called on names, I don't know. It's the lady with I want to say
Linda?
From Boston. Yeah, Linda. Thank you. And then she has a couple of people that she usually goes.
She
with
going? I thought she said she wasn't going.
Oh, maybe
this year.
She's. I didn't know. Maybe she's not going.
I know
this
she
year,
was there last
year.
Past.
Yeah.
Linda and her husband.
And then didn't you know someone who had their son there as well? A guy, silver hair, young son. Introduced,
now,
made introductions for a little bit.
Now, wait a minute.
He's coming
actually,
to Geek Gathering before.
I'm sorry, we can have a Geek Gathering. Well, I guess we could have a Geek Gathering.
Hold on. I thought we were, because
no,
that's the first.
I'm wrong. I have to take the notice down because KD5 just called me out. For some reason, I thought that the Geek Gathering was coinciding with the first weekend. Oh, it's that darn first Saturday after the second Friday thing again.
Let's see if there's a calendar on the internet.
No, it's I am incorrect.
No, August 1st is a Friday. That's what I was thinking. There's one more Geek Gathering before DEF CON.
So we'll have the DEF CON edition.
Yeah, pretty much. And then we're off to Vegas that next week, I believe.
So and we're all looking forward to the part where Barrett explains to the people who didn't know their names why he didn't at the next Geek Gathering. So you want to show up and see that. Get there early.
Yes, sorry, Linda.
Oh,
I do blank on names when put on the spot.
I do too. I mean, I have people at my office who come up, you know, and they need to get their account unlocked, and I forget. You know,
spell your name exactly for me.
Yeah. What's your last name?
J-O-N.
What's your last name? Is if I'm going to look it up that way. So Smith. Okay, crap. Yeah, I do the same thing, and I have such stage fright anyway. It's like I once they walk up, I say if I don't remember their name, it's going to be bad. Well,
already too late.
It's too late at that point. You know, so I confess that I have bad name recollection.
Now, given a username, I can probably remember like what they've got permissions to and what they're doing to the systems, but matching that username up to an actual person is sometimes tenuous.
Yeah, it can be that way for me too. I can tell.
You know their IP address, but you don't know.
Oh, yeah,
I know their Mac address for crying out loud. Prove me wrong.
Mr. OOFE.
All right. So, so there will be a Geek Gathering. That means I have to rewrite the, I have to take that post down, which I've done, and put a new post up. I won't be at the Geek Gathering, though. I'll be gone. That's why I canceled it. Maybe Pete will come down. I see that you guys have the lights off in the y'all's room there. Like, you're being like Saeed.
It came this way.
It came.
It was like that when we got here.
Yeah, don't blame me. I didn't do it. All right, so we are going to be with you until 10 o'clock tonight here for Technology Bytes. Phone number if you want to be on the air and talk to us about your plans for DEF CON or Geek Gatherings or rebooting or reformatting your hard drive or whatever. 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT to call in the Technology Bites. But first, before the calls go on the air, now this is a good time to call in if you want to get in the queue, but before we actually put calls on the air, we're going to go out to San Antonio now that we got Flicted's laptop rebooted and got Pete on the Skype and do the Technology Bites info shot. So thanks for that, Flicted.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right, from the looking forward to the future in fear department, this is the most odd one, the odd story. We've talked about driverless cars and that kind of stuff, and the Guardian in the UK obtained an FBI report through an open records request where they are worried that the FBI is worried that autonomous cars, quote, will have a high impact on transforming what both law enforcement and its adversaries can operationally do with a car. In a section called multitasking, the report notes that, quote, bad actors will be able to conduct tasks that require use of both hands or taking one's eyes off the road, which would be impossible today. Now, translating that from FBI speak to reality, that means they're worried that you'll be able to sit in your self-driving car. If you're a criminal, you'll be able to sit in your self-driving car, and while it drives you to the getaway, you can shoot at the FBI with both hands, which is kind of I haven't seen any of them where they're particularly fast. It's like Google's self-driving prototype can't go faster than 25 miles per hour. So it's kind of like worrying that golf carts would lead somehow to, I don't know, more crime. There's your FBI looking out for the criminal future because, of course, of course, having a self-driving car that's programmed to obey traffic laws and slow down for obstacles and go the speed limit and all that stuff is exactly what criminals want, right? So it adds a whole new layer of hacking. I guess that's going to be in our future movies, is that it'll be the first thing is Jason Statham will hack his car so that it'll go 5 miles an hour over the speed limit. It's one of those where, yes, it's nice that they look at it and see what kind of impact it would have, but really, some of this is like finding crime where it doesn't make sense to find it. In other future-y stuff, while we're talking about the future stuff, the multi-billion-dollar global market for robotics, long dominated by industrial and logistics uses, has begun to see a shift toward new consumer and office applications. The market for consumer and office robots will grow at a rate of 17% between 2014 and 2019, 7 times faster than the market for manufacturing robots. They think that by 2019, there will be a $1.5 billion market for consumer and business robots. That's kind of cool. In a recent report from Business Intelligence, they assessed the market for consumer and office robots, taking a close look at the 3 distinct categories within the market: home cleaning, telepresence, and home entertainment robots. I wonder what the heck that is. I hesitate to guess, Rildahl. They also examine the market for industrial manufacturing robots, since it is the market where many robotics companies got their start and is the largest by revenue. So it should be very interesting to see where that goes in the future, but clearly it's starting to show growth, which means that more people are going to be having robotics at home or in their offices, and maybe someday we'll have our first call for somebody to Technology Bites for somebody who needs help with their robot. I'm looking forward to that. I for one, welcome our robotic callers. And other future stuff, it's July. All you've got is what people imagine for the future. It's not like they're going to release their brand new revolutionary new product in the heat of the summer like this. They're going to wait until they may pre-announce it, but they're not going to actually ship it until, September or something. Intel, though, has talked about their vision for your next PC. They think it should be thinner than an iPad and much like an iconic tablet, to be wire-free and cost less too. And they're, you know, this Intel, they don't, they're not like, this isn't FUD. They're not trying to like keep up, brush back AMD or something. They, of course, are developing the chips and the technologies to meet the goals. Apparently, the first fruits of that development are going to be available starting this coming year-end holiday, according to CEO Brian Krzanich on an earnings call this week in which he discussed the company's vision of future PCs. About 600 million PCs worldwide are more than 4 years old and due for upgrades, so the development efforts come at a good time. You know, it's always good to make a product when people need a new one. Tablets thinner and lighter than the iPad that could be used as full PC replacements will be on store shelves by the end of this year, he said. Laptops and desktops with faster, more power-efficient Broadwell processor will be widely available in the first quarter of next year. And the Broadwell processor is the one – there's been some rumors talking about a the first MacBook Air that doesn't have a fan. Basically, because it's more power efficient, it throws off less heat. You get the same processing power for less juice and less heat, so you don't have to put a fan in it at all, so it's perfectly silent. In the future, further in the future, Intel sees Chromebooks with mobile broadband connectivity and PCs that are wire-free. Paper-thin PC replacement tablets will have long battery life, high-res screens, and offer the fast performance of core processors, according to Krzanich. The devices will have Intel's new Core M chip based on Broadwell, the one we were just talking about, a reference tablet codenamed Llama Mountain, which is 6.8 millimeters thick and weighs 550 grams. Wow, is one example of this new system type. The 10-inch tablet has a 2560 by 1600 pixel screen and turns into a laptop when attached to a keyboard dock. The dock also has cooling technology to crank up the CPU performance, so when you dock it, you get, you know, more power. Asus Tech later this year will ship the Transformer T300 Chi or Chi dual function device, which has a 6.8 millimeter detachable tablet, and that's going to have a Core M chip. And like I said before, anticipation is growing for Broadwell, which will be in a wider range of low-priced and performance PCs in the first quarter. Looking beyond Broadwell, Intel will release the successor Skylake, which could also be in PCs next year. With Skylake, Intel hopes to disconnect wires from PCs with integrated support for wireless docking, charging, display, and data transfer. How's that one? Intel previewed the wire-free technology last month at Computex, with computers not needing power cords, display connectors, or peripheral cables. Sounds like they drank the Steve Jobs Kool-Aid. You know, he didn't like wires and that. So there's also going to be improvements in graphics. The chips are going to be made, you know, Broadwell and Skylake are going to be 14 nanometer, which will bring faster performance and more power efficiency than the current fat ass 22 nanometer chips. Intel's also going to wants to bring mobile broadband connectivity to Chromebooks, though they didn't give a time frame. Right now there isn't mobile broadband with them, but they want to put its modem in the laptops so the internet is more accessible. Majority of Chromebooks currently have Pentium and Celeron chips, based on Haswell and Bay Trail. Intel is due to release new Pentium or Celeron chips codenamed Braswell, which will be used in the Chromebooks. Windows tablets with Intel's Atom chip, codenamed Cherry Trail, which will succeed current Bay Trail Atom chips, will also be on store shelves by the end of the year. Android tablets could be coming in the mix next year. So there's all kinds of – there actually is some cool stuff from a lot of different places that's potentially in the offing. And this one, hopefully I'm not stealing any Barrett time thunder, but on this day in 1969, 45 years ago, the moon landing took off, or, you know, the Apollo 11, the flight that landed on the moon took off. And you know, they launched from Florida, and I think this one bleeds from – this goes from geeky to nerdy. But to mark the 20th anniversary, there's a Los Angeles boutique shoe company called Android Hom and Jack Threads are releasing high-top sneakers inspired by the space boots worn by Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. They're only selling 100 pairs of the shoes Sunday at 4:18. 4:18 p.m. Eastern Time, the same time as the moon landing. And GE sponsored this. GE, which was one of the many companies and agencies that provided designs for the original launch, is stressing the materials used in the sneakers to make them stand out. For one, each side of the shoe is comprised of super light, heat-resistant carbon fiber. We really wanted to be about the benefits materials have in industry and correlate that to the benefits materials have in fashion, said Sam Olstein. In addition, GE has launched a campaign on Snapchat to promote the materials used in the shoes. So the thing is, if you want to have like Buzz Aldrin looking tennis shoes to wear to the next geek gathering, perhaps, you better be prepared to throw out a couple $100. And be one of the 100 people who can order them online on Sunday at 4:18 p.m. So, you know, I don't know. If there's only 100, then that means nobody else is going to see them. If you have, you know, nobody else is going to be around with them. And will that make you look like a dork or will it make you look cool? I don't know. Maybe if you get them early enough that you can learn to moonwalk in them, then possibly. In other news, sort of future-y stuff, here's how the times are changing. MTV is going to use Snapchat to unveil its nominees for the Video Music Awards before they're announced anywhere else. The nominations will appear in 8 10-second Snapchat videos starting at 9 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, according to Mashable. All you big Snapchat fans can, you know, sit there and watch the future happen with MTV. In bad news, Microsoft reportedly will announce the biggest round of layoffs in its history on Thursday. Happy summer vacation, guys, as massive changes wrought by new CEO Satya Nadella start to take hold at the struggling IT giant. The layoffs, which have been expected amid Nadella's calls for transformation at Microsoft, will dwarf the 5,800 cuts it announced in 2009, according to New York Times. They cited unnamed sources briefed on the decision. Said human resource managers have reserved conference rooms for most of Thursday, presumably to meet with laid-off employees. Most but not all the cuts will be from businesses Microsoft took on through its acquisition of Nokia earlier this year, which added about 25,000 workers, according to the Times. Right now, Microsoft has about 130,000 employees. It's not a surprise and shocker, but there's been some anticipation of this, but, you know, seeing it where it's actually happening, it's kind of a surprise given Microsoft's strength over, you know, the past how many decades. And then just to add to, you know, if you're a Microsoft employee, your nightmare is you're going to be laid off. If you're Microsoft, your nightmare is IBM and Apple partnering up for the enterprise business. Once upon a time, they defined the opposing sides of the personal computer business. You know, the whole 1984 is not like 1984 ad. That was Apple throwing the hammer at IBM. They're now uniting in a wide-ranging partnership to transform the business world. Playing to their strengths, one will provide iPhones, iPads, and excellent customer support, while the other will craft made-for-business apps and add device management, security, and analytics for enterprise clients. It's an overt assault on BlackBerry's last bastion of strength, the phone that's in every suit pocket, you know, the CrackBerry, and should strike fear into the hearts of other mobile contenders like Samsung, Google, and Microsoft. The scariest thing about the deal, though, according to The Verge, is how simple it is and how obvious it is. Enterprise is notoriously complicated, and Apple's always been weak in the enterprise, but IBM has no problem understanding the enterprise, what it needs and wants, and they certainly have the sales force and all that to get in there. Apple's not a company with too many problems. CEO Tim Cook will happily recite these stratospheric revenues and profits on a daily basis. However, there's no hiding from the inevitable slowdown in growth as the market for tablets and smartphones, you know, matures. That trend has manifested itself in a 16% drop in iPad sales over the last quarter, and Apple has to find new places to sell them. The obvious answer, you know, on some stuff they discounted the cheaper iPhone 5C and some of that other stuff. But if they can crack open the enterprise market, then that opens them up to a ton of places that have cash and will spend it. So, you know, it's not like Apple and IBM have never gotten together and done stuff. The PowerPC processor was an IBM product. So, you know, this idea that they've never, ever had anything with each other is kind of exaggerated to make the article more interesting, but not altogether true. And finally, on new stuff, or at least possible new stuff. You know, like I said, nobody announces new things right now in this part of the summer. But this is an interesting possibility. Apparently, Amazon is planning to launch the ultimate subscription package for book lovers. As first reported by GigaOm, the company is apparently preparing a new offering called Kindle Unlimited, which will provide unlimited access to over 600,000 ebook titles and thousands of audiobooks for a subscription fee of about $10 a month. Amazon has yet to unveil it in any official capacity, but oh, this is a good one. But users spotted promotional banners for the unannounced server on the retailer's website. It seems you'll be able to access Kindle Unlimited content from, quote, any device that already supports Amazon's Kindle ecosystem, meaning anything that can run a Kindle app like iOS, Android, Mac OS X, Windows, Windows Phone, and obviously all the other – the Kindles and Kindle Fire. 600,000 books sounds like a lot, but it is kind of a small number compared to the number of titles that are around. So it suggests that major publishers may not yet be supportive of the subscription approach, but titles that come from Amazon's own imprints and those included in the Kindle Owner's Lending Library – a perk that normally are reserved for Amazon Prime subscribers, are listed on what looks like to be an early test page for Kindle Unlimited's catalog. As for audiobooks, Audible, which I think Amazon owns, has a library of over 150,000 titles. Amazon says it will make thousands available on an unlimited basis, but it's not clear how many thousands that is, and it's not like they're going to put all of them out since Audible already charges a lot more than $10 a month for listening privileges, and those aren't on unlimited plans. If this happens, which, you know, the banners are around, people have seen the banners, if it does happen, Amazon will have a subscription service for nearly every form of consumable media, movies, TV, music, and books. Most require customers to shell out for the annual Prime fee, but it seems that Amazon may be exploring a different path here. There are obviously plenty of unknowns, you know, how soon would new releases get on there and will publishers support it and all that. But it sounds like it could be very valuable for people who like to read books on their electronic devices. And that's the InfoShot News, and I'm Peter Hughes.
All right. Well, you look like you're about to take a nap there, Flicted. First of all, you have to understand that the control room is dark. So all I can see, and Flicted and Groovehouse are both wearing dark clothing. So there's just slightly illuminated faces kind of bobbing in there. Not really bobbing because they're just like both looking down. Flicted's face palming. And now they're doing the Night at the Roxy thing from Saturday Night Live. All right. So anyway.
What is love?
Glad somebody got that. All right, so I've updated the webpage to reflect that the Geek Gathering is actually happening since I canceled it for no reason.
So you canceled the canceling?
I canceled the cancellation, so I uncanceled it. So hopefully that means that Barrett and Flicted and maybe Groovehouse will be there. KD5 will be there. He has to be there because he was the one that said, "Hey, wait!" So it's on him to bring the technology. All right, so I see we have a call in the queue, which is good, but we would like to invite more people to call in and have a nice, you know, friendly round of banter with Technology Bytes here. So dial 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. We'd love to have you, 713-526-KPFT. And while we're waiting for you to dial in and let Groovehouse do his Groovehouse thing, we will go to the first call. So, Groovehouse, who do we have?
All right, up first on the show, we are going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
All right, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I have a very serious question. Do any of you have a degree in psychiatry? because you're not going to believe this. All right, now, you know, it was James Bond that said once is an accident, twice is coincidence, three times is enemy action. So this really happened to me, and I want you to hear me out. All right, I have had a problem with accessing a particular website. And I actually know this guy, and I was going to email him and say, well, did you get hacked or did I? And the last time this happened, I couldn't get into email, I couldn't get anywhere, and I discovered that Yahoo had a worldwide shutdown. You guys straightened me out and explained that, well, yeah, Yahoo is famous for this, but now I'm getting everywhere but just one website. And when I click on it, and it comes up, and it's a blank screen, and the taskbar gets halfway, and that's it for the rest of the night. So I just give up and shut it down. But one time, I decided to go on the telephone, so I'm on dial-up, and I unplug my phone, and I unplug my computer, and I plugged in my phone, and all of a sudden, it showed up. Well, what a strange coincidence. Okay, that's weird. Then it happened a second time. I was waiting and waiting and waiting, and I wanted to call in a radio show, probably you guys, and I unplugged the computer and I plugged in my phone, and boom, there it was. So then I thought, well, this is weird. So one time I pulled up this website, and I sat and watched TV with my wife, and we're sitting there watching Archie Bunker, and I waited a half an hour, and it wouldn't come up. So I unplugged the computer and plugged in my phone, and boom, there it was. Now, does this mean that the data is being downloaded to my computer and it's not the Internet connection, and all of a sudden when I unplug it, what does that mean? I swear to God, this has happened three times. This is weird.
What I would guess is happening is that since you have visited this website in the past, that when you disconnect your computer from the Internet, it's going ahead and loading a cached copy of the website.
But it's the newest post. I mean, it is the current data.
Okay, if that's
how
the case,
how can it work without the Internet connection?
Then it means it downloaded the data, but it didn't display it until you disconnected your modem connection and it stopped trying to pull down new data. So
it's my computer.
It's Def. Bye-bye. All right, so we're not going to let him back on the air ever again. Did we get that flicked? Did we get that dumped?
Probably not.
I think so.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, so Groovehouse, if that guy ever calls back in again, he's not allowed on the air.
Okay.
Right. A lot of times, you know, like loose bits will, you know, fill up your Ethernet cable, and when you pull it out, they'll kind of jiggle free and find callers like Gary.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, he's on dial-up, for one, so I don't know if the page is particularly image-intensive or if there's something in there that's not making it.
And that could be what he could have loaded up everything. It could have been choking on the images, getting the images loaded up. And
right.
Then when it did finally, you know, go and display the cache, it showed what it could, no images, so it looked like, you know, he probably never saw the page because he was still loading it up.
Right.
On his 28.8 or 56.6 or whatever he happens to have.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Groovehouse,
yes.
I see you have a call in the queue and a call coming in.
Yes, so we do.
Give me the one in the queue.
You got it. We're going to speak with Jeff.
Jeff, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys. I've got an ongoing problem with my son's laptop and the wireless adapter on it. Had to put a new hard drive in it because the other one got fried. Did a full restore on it using the same set of disks he had previously done a successful restore with. But we can't get the wireless adapter to work. We've downloaded the drivers from Asus. It's a Asus Windows 7 64-bit laptop. I can't figure out if I've got the right driver for the adapter, so I call them up, and the guy's walking me through it, and he gets so frustrated, he drops the line and never calls back. So I go to Microsoft and locate a driver set that they have for this specific Qualcomm adapter, which redirects me to an HP site, that installs correctly, but when, and it's enabled and everything, but when I disconnect the Ethernet cable I use to download it, it can't find any networks. When I run the diagnostics on it, he said there's a problem with your driver. So I try another trick I used before, which is to use this little TP-Link wireless adapter that plugs into a USB port.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that won't even work, and it gives the same problem. There's a problem with your with the driver for your wireless adapter. So I'm running out of ideas.
All right, so this is this a computer that you built yourself, or is this a laptop made by Asus?
It's an off-the-shelf laptop.
All right. So I presume that, how old is it, first of all?
A couple of years.
Did it come with any recovery software?
No, they ask you to create it.
And I'm guessing you didn't create it.
No, I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, no, and we've used those disks previously to do a full successful restore.
Okay, but we're not talking about a full successful restore right now, are we?
No, we are. I put a new hard drive in it.
Okay, so you used the restore disk, and you restored everything that it had, and should have loaded up the wireless drivers, right, that came with it?
Yes, it didn't even install the adapter.
Okay. Well, when you replaced the hard drive, did you replace that because the computer was having an issue of some kind?
Yes.
What was the issue besides the hard drive? Anything else?
No, it was just the hard drive. I mean, the wireless part of it was working fine, but we ran check disk on it and found all these errors. It was doing a lot of flaky things, so we figured, you know, we'll just go get another hard drive.
Okay. I know that sometimes it can be difficult to run down the correct wireless driver for a particular computer, but if you go to the Asus website and you plug in that model number, it should only present you with the wireless driver. It might present you with more than one wireless driver. I know this is true for Dell. So, like, sometimes it'll be an Intel driver, and sometimes it'll be something else. They change the wireless hardware, even if it's the same model computer. So, you have to if you don't know what your wireless device is, you have to download all the drivers they have and then go through each one and try to install it. The good news on the, at least with the Dells for me, has been that if I go to install the driver and it's not the correct driver, it says I don't see the hardware and it doesn't install. So I go to the next one and I install the software and then boom, it works.
Well, we tried installing the one that the support guy at Asus suggested, and that would create an error. And when I told the support guy that, that's when he got off the line and then the call dropped and never heard back from him. And he thought I was crazy. You know, he thought I had no idea what I was doing because I kept on telling him, look, I'm doing what you're telling me, but all I'm getting is Azureware error.
Do you know what the model number is by any chance?
It's an X53E.
An
X53?
X53E.
And it's Asus, right?
That's correct. You can go to the website. You go to the support. See, I've been there numerous times.
Right.
I've tried this half a dozen times. I've again tried it with the drivers that Microsoft said would work for. I think it's the Qualcomm 4685 adapter. I tried those. Those would install, but again, I had the same problem. And even that TP-Link trick, which I've used in other cases, which usually works, doesn't work.
Barrett, did you,
Get both LAN drivers, the Atheros, which I believe is owned by Qualcomm? That's probably the one you got. There's also an Azureware.
That's correct. I got the Atheros one. It's a small file, relatively speaking. It's like 2 megabytes.
I would go, and if you go back, there were some other ones there, too. There was an Intel Wi-Fi wireless LAN driver.
Yeah, I won't install that.
Okay, so the only one that'll take is the Atheros.
I have another thought, though, and one that something that I've seen, and I don't know if it would affect, I don't know if I've seen it affect Ethernet drivers, but there are some chipset drivers.
Okay.
So if you go back to the Asus download site for that model laptop, when you go to the device manager, is the wireless the only thing that doesn't seem to have, does it have an exclamation point on it?
No.
So it says it's installed and it's working?
Correct.
Does it show up as an actual adapter? Like when you go to, you know, the network and show me my internet, and you might, I'm sorry, my network adapters, does it show up as like wireless adapter one or something like that? Do you know how to get there?
I haven't tried that.
I would see if it's showing up.
So if you go to network, is it Windows 7?
Yes.
So when you click on the little icon down in the lower right-hand corner that shows you all, should show you wireless access points. It's not obviously not showing you anything, but you should be able to go into your network settings and see if you have an adapter for that wireless. But before you go down that road, I'm just wondering, now in your device manager, is there anything that appears to be missing?
Not as far as I can tell.
Okay, so you could tell because usually it'll be like a yellow exclamation point or a question mark or something like that.
It seems to be fine. It goes through all the tabs. You know, it's got what looks like the proper driver. It looks fine to my semi-educated eyes.
Well, it's unfortunate if the actual support for the manufacturer bailed on you.
Well, I've been meaning to call them back and maybe find something who's a little more, someone who's a little more cooperative.
Yeah. Well,
when I go through these steps, I mean, really, this guy thought I just had no idea what I was doing, and I think he just decided
he
to
just
fail.
He assumed that because it wasn't working, that it must be you.
Right.
Now, is it? It's not under warranty, I take it, right?
No, it's not.
Yeah. And how long ago did you do the complete reload?
A couple weeks ago, but he had done one basically on his own at school last year. Same problem. Kind of hard on the hard drives. I'm not exactly sure
why.
But
he did the reload and it worked, right?
And it worked just fine. Reloaded everything just fine. Same set of disks.
It just sounds to me like something didn't go well in the reinstall, or that whatever, you know, hardware, whatever's causing the hard drive to go up might have damaged the Wi-Fi hardware.
Yeah, I'm thinking that might be possible. How would I narrow that down?
It'd be pretty tough to do. I don't know of a good diagnostic for Wi-Fi hardware at all. It's just, if it doesn't.
That's why I'm shocked that the TP-Link thing doesn't work.
Oh, the other device you tried to install to
yes.
give you some Wi-Fi, so you didn't get any Wi-Fi off of that either.
No. So it's like something's wrong at a fundamental level.
Go try and find the actual network adapters. I mean, you can also get there if you like go start my computer, my network, and then other places. I know that's a lot of steps and view network connections, but I would see if they're there. And then is there a checkbox that says, hey, allow Windows to configure these devices versus having to have the actual client software?
Well, I don't know if that matters necessarily,
yeah.
But the other thing you could try doing is going to the device manager and uninstalling it.
Yeah, I've tried that.
And then reboot it and let it redetect it and reinstall.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah, like you said, he's tried to install a secondary adapter, like into a USB port.
Yeah.
And that's not working.
Yeah, I heard that.
Either.
That's just weird. I'd still like to get a hold of the interfaces and see what it says, see what chipsets they say. And you can also, if it does show up, you can actually right-click on it and go repair and just see what it says about the driver at that point, or see if it says anything like, hey, I can't connect, or hey, media not detected, or
okay.
something along those lines.
Yeah, I'm not thinking of anything right off the top of my head that's telling me how to resolve this, but if it has been reloaded in the past and it worked, and it's only been a couple of weeks since you tried to reload using the recovery disks, you might want to just go back to square one.
Yeah, we're trying to avoid that because it's such a pain, but we may have to just...
Well, I mean, at the very least, I mean, if you did go that route, you could try, if the Wi-Fi did not actually work before you went trying to install drivers or anything like that, you could try that other device to see if it works, as it may be that in your efforts to get this thing to work and installing all these different drivers that you put something into the system that it didn't like. Now, there's another thing I recall from computers, some laptops a while back, in that the Wi-Fi wouldn't work until, like, all the system updates had gotten through, like, service packs.
Yeah, it's all the way updated.
Okay, so you've updated out on an Ethernet connection, got it all.
Right.
All the Windows updates are in place.
Correct. I believe so. I mean, it took several days for it to catch up on all the updates.
If you run Windows Update, does it have anything left that it wants to try to install?
You know, I can try that.
I would say certainly try it. What did you?
This is probably not it, but just along the lines of like, hey, is it plugged in? I think on the laptop you've got, it's function F2 toggles whether wireless is on or off. Have you tried hitting that too? Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, I've run through the whole checklist that I know, tips I've read online, and I guess the only thing left to do is just go back to square one and try it all over again.
That might be the best. I mean, at least that would be, you know, maybe a more useful use of your time. But you could also call Asus back up and see what they say. But they're charging you for that, aren't they?
No, they'll actually take a call for nothing. They're actually pretty good about that.
That's pretty cool.
That's why I bought another one from them. I mean, we have two of these X53s, and the other ones work solid, but this one seems to eat hard drives.
Okay, so you have two of the same model?
Yes.
All right, here's an experiment for you. Take the hard drive out of the working one and put it into this one and see if the Wi-Fi works.
I like that.
If it doesn't work, then you know you got a hardware issue. And if it does work, then you know it's a software issue.
No, I like that. I think I'll try that first.
That's an easy and quick one too, because you should only be a couple of screws away from that.
Right, right. No, it's a really simple install.
Yeah. So I'd try that. Just that way, you can just make sure that the hardware is okay.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good. I'll give it a whirl.
All right. Well, wish you a lot of luck. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye bye. All right. Wow, that's a weird one. Groovehouse looks like he has the answer, but he doesn't want to share it.
Yeah, that's me.
That's me.
Somebody thought y'all were mean.
Just now? To him?
No.
Groovehouse think I was mean?
No.
Did someone call in and say we were mean?
No, we're good.
All right.
Flicted thought you were
Flicted
mean?
Flicted thinks you're mean.
Well. Do you think I'm mean, Flicted?
Don't make me come in there.
To me?
No, I don't think I'm mean to you. I've been nothing but nice to you.
You're not mean to me.
No. Thought I was mean to that guy who let one fly on us?
Yeah, I don't think people knew that.
Because
I dumped correctly. Okay.
All right. Well, he may or may not have broken one of the cardinal rules of radio, which we hopefully bleeped.
But, well, I think we did because I asked on IRC and two people said they didn't hear it.
Okay, good. All right, so he can maybe call back. It frustrates me, you know. I mean, that guy, he calls every week, you know, and he's a decent enough fellow, but he's very difficult to try to explain things to, and then just to have that happen.
We never explicitly say don't say explicit words on air, but you kind of have to wonder that people know that, you know.
Right, yeah, you know, there are...
Even just in polite conversation, you probably shouldn't do that.
Even in polite conversation, right.
Much less on air.
Yeah, so... Yeah. All right. So, okay.
Flick Maybe he's a sailor.
son of a sailor. All right. Well, we'll see what happens next week. But, you know, you just can't do that. Skating on thin ice here, you know, in public radio. You got to be careful. And Flicked was distracted, and I couldn't see in the dark if he hit the dump button. All right, Groovehouse. See, so you have a call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. Groovehouse, who's up?
Up next, we are going to speak with Bill.
Bill, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, y'all. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Let's see here. I've got a couple of hard drives that are acting up. One of them, when I go to my computer and I look at the size, it says there's 885 gigabytes. 3 out of 2.72 terabyte, 3 terabyte drive. But then when I double click it and I select all the folders and I hit properties, it shows like 455 less gigabytes than what it shows on my computer. And I'm wondering if it's going bad or...
I don't think it's going bad. When you take properties on a machine like that, will it show you hidden files and stuff like that? It will?
Yeah.
I mean, when it does the tally, will it?
So say that again. So you've got a hard drive in your computer, and it's reporting a different size?
Yeah, when you go to My Computer where it shows, like, how much of the drive is free, that's one size. But then when I double-click on the drive and it shows all the folders in the drive and I select all of those and then I go to Properties or, you know, Alt, Enter or whatever shortcut, it brings up a little property window and it shows the size of the drive. Or, yeah.
Of all the files, folders.
Right.
Which comes out to like 455, I think, gigabytes, less than what it shows on My Computer screen.
450 gigabytes? So you have a terabyte drive or an 800 gig drive or something like that?
It's a 3 terabyte drive.
And it's a single drive?
Yeah.
Not like a RAID or anything like that?
And you don't have it partitioned or anything like that?
Nope.
And so you're missing a half a terabyte when you do that?
Yeah. Yeah. And then I was backing it up to an external 3 terabyte MyBook. The internal is a Seagate Barracuda, and the external is a Western Digital MyBook 3 terabyte. And I was using the incremental software, Western Digital WD software, to do incremental backups, like real time. And last couple of days ago, I was kind of poking around looking at the size of a couple of hard drives I was backing up to it, and they were smaller than they should have been. And then I went to the event viewer in computer management and was looking around, and there's several errors and warnings and stuff. One of them says the file system structure on the disk is corrupt and unusable. Please use the check disk utility on the volume 3 terabyte internal.
Okay.
So, I don't know if I have two drives going bad at the same time, or
you might have something that's giving you, it has bad file system, you know, information. There might, you know, because when you're getting the, what do you got?
Oh, no, I think you're onto what it is.
When you get, the way that the computer calculates how much drive space it has, it's looking at a file allocation table and trying to make a determination on that. And if there's any corruption in that allocation table, or there could be, it could misreport the amount of data that's being used. So certainly, you know, running a check disk with a repair option on it might clear that up for you.
Okay.
Yeah, that would explain the big mismatch.
And another thing you could do is run, there's a program called Windirstat, WINDIRSTAT.
Okay.
It's a Windows Directory Statistics program, and you run it, and it analyzes your hard drive, and it'll tell you what's using, you know, which folders are using the most space, and you can try to see if that sees a folder that might be misrepresented.
Okay.
It's a very handy tool. It takes a little while to run. It'll take a while to run on a 3 terabyte drive, but it'll give you a graphical representation of your hard drive and what's using what file space where. And it will also give you a list of all your folders and files and tell you how much each folder, and you can sort it by the most to the least, and you can see what's using up the majority of your space.
Okay.
What do you got, Barrett?
It could be, aside from a failing drive, the other thing that could be happening is it looks like on Windows there is a difference in reporting on the size of files. When you, like, for instance, if you have a disk that you have very large, I guess they're called, are they called clusters more or less?
Yeah.
On a disk, if you have very large, when you put like a small, say you've got a 4K little compartment that you can store a file on a disk, and you've got a 1K file. If you put that 1K file in there, even though that file is 1K, it's going to take up 4K on the disk. So if we're just going to do this on one thing, on one file, your disk space would show, hey, he's got 4K. The size of the file would show 1K. So you've got, you know, it's 400% difference there. If you've got a ton of really small files out there, it could be increasing the size of the disk space used, which you would see when you take the size of the C drive. But when you say, hey, add up all the actual file sizes, it's going to show a smaller number. And it's a lot of people are asking that online.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. And I guess with a drive this size.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, because to be able to get all that space addressable, they start cutting up really large chunks to where it used to be a little bit. Now I've seen like 4K. So, I mean, that's a lot of storage for one little slice of disk.
Now, I assume that there's no way to do a 3 terabyte drive as anything other than NTFS, right? It is formatted NTFS.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You know, because, yeah, I know with file allocations, like Barrett said, you know, you can get a little discrepancy in size because if you take, like he said, if you take a 1K file and you write it to the drive, it's going to take 4K of space because the allocation on the hard drive says that, you know, there's a 4K allocation and we're not going to just use a small part of that and then give it to the other files. So one file takes that up. So a lot of little files can do that. But still sounds weird
still
to me
a lot of space,
that a half a terabyte's missing or is misrepresented.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd run some other utilities against it, and I don't know that it means it's failing. It just could mean that there's a corruption in the data reporting.
It could have powered off, you know, without cleanly being able to write everything back out. There are a few things that could
have
gone
wrong. Have you run check disk with a repair option on it?
Well, I've just done the – you have two options when you go to check disk. The first one is defaulted check, automatically fix file system errors. I did that, and it showed no problem. But I don't think I've run the scan for an attempt recovery of bad sectors thing. I guess I could do that.
Well, I might also want to, like I said, just try that other tool and see what it tells you about the drive space usage. But, you know, if you got that much data and you're worried about the hardware, you know, I'm not a fan of, if I have doubts on my hard drive, I will get another one because I cannot afford to lose my data.
Yeah. I've actually got two externals. To my books, and one of them I'm hoping is still good. And it's last time I plugged it in, it was reporting more, you know, it looks like more of a correct thing on that drive. And I'm scared to plug it in because I'm wondering if my system or my motherboard or something is just corrupted or something, you know, that it might do it to this one and I'm really done. You know, I think I may have one good external drive that's not plugged in. I'm hoping it's still right. Anyway, can the system actually corrupt and just start doing goofy stuff like that?
It can. I've heard, you know, if you have bad memory, sometimes it can cause corrupted data to be written to the disk. On rare occasions, I've seen where, you know, drives will get damaged just because they're connected to a computer that's sending bad current to it. Well, listen, we're out of time. We're going to have to take our station break. But
Okay. Good
luck to you, and thanks for your call.
Thank you all.
All right, bye-bye. All right, was that mean? I hope that wasn't mean. Now Flickit's got me all self-conscious. Groovehouse has got his head down. He's just looking into his phone. Although he just looks like the thinking man. All right, well, that music tells us we're about to take a short station break, which we have to tend to some station business. Thanks for the calls so far. We got more time to take more calls in the second hour. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us in the second half of the show. In the meantime, we're going to take care of the station business and let you know that you've been listening to Technology Bites. So I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
hungry.
We'll be right back.
El patrocinio de Radio Escuchas es una respuesta práctica al problema de obtener y mantener mejores programas de radio. Un enfoque a anunciantes o a las audiencias masivas considera mediocridad de la radio comercial. Con esta mediocridad, el mejoramiento de la radio es una utopía. Cuando los radioescuchas apoyan la radio que ellos disfrutan, sus opciones son mejores. El patrocinio de radioescuchas les permite tomar el control de su radio, de las manos de compañías y las pone en manos de la comunidad. Pero mantener este tipo de radio requiere de usted. Su donación es nuestro apoyo para mantener KPFT en el aire como un recurso vital de la comunidad. Así que visite la página de internet www.kpft.org para convertirse en un miembro el día de hoy. Su donación es esencial para mantener viable el patrocinio de Radio Escuchas para las generaciones por venir. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas. Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
La Let's face it, most of today's media caters to our love affair with celebrities and show business, or it is driven by a corporate conglomerate's bottom line. That's why KPFT is an oasis you can turn to quench your intellectual thirst. For independent, trustworthy journalism, for diverse music and culture, for radio with purpose. These days, you can't take this kind of radio for granted. Now, more than ever, it's time to make a stand with your support of community radio. 365 days a year, we need you to keep this independent voice alive and well. Simply visit kpft.org to become a member of not just a radio station, but an oasis of music, culture, news, and more. That's kpft.org. Don't wait for a pledge drive. Visit us online to join now. This is KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. You guys smell that? That a little too long without a shower smell with a hint of Pocky and just a trace of Cheeto dust?
Pocky? I hadn't heard Pocky in a while. You still doing Pocky?
I'm not doing Pocky like I used to. I need to go find some. Any guesses as to what that smell is? No, that's the smell of con season. Con season is upon us. Con's a lot like hanging out in a series of chat rooms populated by people with similar interests, only instead of hanging out in a chat room, you hang out in a conference room. Now, a conference room is a lot like a chat room you'd find online, only with actual chairs. A virtual chat room, if you will. So instead of meeting and hanging out online, attendees have to physically travel to the place of the talk, stand in line, probably give someone money, and then push through the other attendees who also had to physically travel there and search for the room you want to join or, you know, quote-unquote, enter. Conferences have downsides in that you can't be in more than one room at one time, and when you do want to move to another room, the process is very laggy and requires physical exertion and pants. So with that warning, we're going to go ahead and take a look at some of the big tech cons coming your way this summer. Of course, DEF CON is coming up. This has been happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, each August for 21 years. Home to the largest hacker convention in the United States, as well as the most hostile network in the world, DEF CON is a spinoff of HoHoCon. Now, it does have ties to Las Vegas, but HoHoCon is not what you'd think. I believe it got its name for being held around Christmas versus being named after Las Vegas ladies with tiny purses. HoHoCon actually got its start in Houston, so arguably DEF CON has Houston roots. Taking place Thursday, August 7th through Sunday the 10th, cash only at the registration line. That's for DEF CON. Stacked before that is the Security B-Sides Las Vegas 5th Anniversary. This multi-day con is free to attend and takes place just down the strip in the days leading up to DEF CON. Black Hat also factors in, overlapping with B-Sides, but requires a hefty chunk of change to gain entry. Black Hat is also a spinoff of DEF CON, having gone private after being sold by Jeff Moss, a.k.a. the Dark Tangent, or the father of DEF CON. On the other side of things, you've got the Digital Life Design Con in Munich. It's a global network of innovation, digitization, science, and culture. We've also got FailCon. So, sadly, not a gathering of afflicted followers, but rather a convention of startup risk-takers and entrepreneurs. A little closer to home, and all the way into next year, is South by Southwest Interactive, written as SXSW and called South by the locals. The interactive session has gained a lot of traction lately on a national scale. And then going back a little bit older, we've got CBIT, which was founded in 1970 to provide an overview of the four pillars of the digital industry: information technology, telecommunications, digital media, and consumer electronics. Last year's attendance topped 330,000. Then back on the security side, we've got HOPE, a.k.a. Hackers on Planet Earth, ShmooCon, TorCon, and the CCCs, which are the Chaos Communication Camp and the Chaos Communication Congress. And if you prefer the cult of Mac to the cult of the dead cow, then iWorld, previously Macworld, may be for you. It's open to the public. iWorld offers over 50 tech talks and has experienced a solid shift towards mobile in recent years. There's also Velocity, as in fast web server performance. And I lied a little bit. There are more HackerCons just for the cool names alone. There's CarolinaCon, Easter Hegg, the Electromagnetic Field Festival, Hackers at Large, Hacktivity, KiwiCon, Freaknik, Rubicon, SIGINT, SummerCon, ThoughtCon, and What the Hack. More general-purpose geek cons include the Geekonomicon in Biloxi, Mississippi, FallCon in Hoover, Alabama, Horisticon, is that how you say it? Horisticon? I believe so. In Fredericksburg, Virginia, it's where everyone gets together and plays Civil War. You've also got Ancient City Con in Jacksonville, Florida, Pulp Fest in Columbia, and Rock Con, my favorite name, in Rochester, New York. There's also the Geek Gathering in Sheffield, Alabama, which is odd, not to be confused with our own Geek Gathering. And no word on ConCon yet, as most would-be attendees have other obligations. That's it for the pros and cons of con life, and that's that for Barrett Time.
There was another con. There was Hackteek, as I recall.
Is it still going on? I was trying to find ones that you could still go to. There are a lot of really cool ones that have been retired. Like, you know, we had Linacon for two short years here in Texas and Austin, and there have been some neat ones, but...
Yeah, Ho-Ho Con, also known as Christmas Con.
Yes.
Credited with leading up to, but came DEF CON.
Yeah, 22 years ago or so. And this was all written while paying attention to callers during the first half of the show. So, you know, not too bad for an on-the-fly.
Well, Ralph Logan, who tunes in once in a while, claims connections to the Cult of the Dead Cow and so forth. There's a Cult of the Dead Cow Facebook.
I think I might follow them, possibly.
Yes.
I know I've gone to the page.
Is 2600 still meeting on first Fridays?
They do. They do.
We know people in that camp.
Yeah, the numbers wane and wax. So I think, I don't know where they are right now in the whole thing. I've been to meetings where there have been like three other people, and then I also know that there have been like, you know, 20 and 25 in the past too. So
they're down to 1300 now?
Their bandwidth did not increase. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us tonight, we've got plenty of open lines. We do have one call in the queue, but all the other lines are open. 713-526-5738. We only ask that you be respectful and obey the FCC rules. All right, Groovehouse, mm-hmm. Who do we have up?
Up next, we're going to speak with Salim.
Salim, you're on the air with Technology Bites. Or not.
It sounded like they just dropped.
Sounded like he dropped right at the last minute. He gave up.
If I can't say bad words, I'm not going to say anything at all.
Oh, the heck with that nonsense. All right. So did you talk? I confess to not tuning into all of the info shot at the beginning of the show. Did you cover the Comcast thing that's kind of hit the news where the guy from AOL... tried to cancel his service.
That was amazing.
No, I didn't do that one.
So the guy from Engadget, his wife called. They were trying to get their Comcast service disconnected, and they got switched over to the customer retention center. And the guy from Comcast, I mean, you know, allegedly, I mean, I'm assuming this is true. Comcast did apologize, but, you know, this could be another one of those internet justice things where it turns out that the actual injustice isn't true, but they have a recording. It's online. You can listen to it. And the guy just cannot understand why the customer service guy cannot understand why the customer wants to disconnect.
He won't give up.
We're the fastest. You're not going to get anything faster. You're not going to get anything better. You're not going to get anything cheaper.
So why would you leave? Why do you want to pay more to get less? I just don't understand.
And it goes on. Very painful.
For like 10 minutes of the guy basically saying, I just need to know why. And he's like, we want to disconnect
and
our service.
Like, I'd like to move on to the... Okay, it got to the point where he says, I will let you ask if you have a checklist of questions. He'll let you go through and ask the questions. He goes, well, why? I decline to answer. Please go to the next question. And the guy's like, cannot understand. It's so painful to listen to.
Whatever happened to the good old days when they just come over and fall asleep on your couch?
Huh?
Do you remember that? That video? Was it a Comcast guy? I believe a Comcast tech came out to someone's house, and you know, someone had a camera phone or some kind of video recorder, and
I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's old. It's probably 6 or 7 years old. He was on hold with Comcast trying to provision a cable line, and he fell asleep on someone's couch while installing cable. And the person came out, like, you know, took a picture. They actually made a movie of him. You know, the dude sleeping on his couch. Yeah, that's still got to be out there. But yeah, they used to be a lot less aggressive. They probably gave them like, hey, you guys have to get out there. Let's see some life.
I mean, it's weird because on some level, I understand the guy, you know, being told or whatever, or he takes his job seriously that he's supposed to retain customers, and they weren't giving him anything to work with, and so he didn't know what to do. But he was just a little just stuck on the fact that he needed an excuse. He needed a reason. And I kept thinking, like, well, what if he just gave him some weird reason that doesn't make any sense? Well, y'all's corporate logo is blue, and I don't like the color blue, so that's why.
I keep getting killed on World of Warcraft.
He actually got to the point where he said, you know, he says, well, give us an example of why you're leaving. He said, well, this phone call
is a pretty good example
of one of the reasons I'm disconnecting my service.
And he's like, but you've been a customer with us for like nine, 10 years through multiple moves, and you've always stayed with us. And so I just don't understand why now you're deciding that you want to go somewhere else. Nobody can offer you the speed. You've got 105 meg or whatever. Nobody can offer that speed, certainly not at the price. So you're basically paying more somewhere to go somewhere to get less. Like, I don't even understand. Why would you want to do that? I mean, why do you want to do that? And the guy's just like, I just want to disconnect. He's like, well, you can't do it on the phone.
Mm-hmm. No, he didn't say that.
No, at some point he did. He said, you have to go in.
He said, my job here is to try to give you a reason to stay. If you were going to disconnect, it'd be a lot simpler if you just went to the Comcast store and turned in your equipment.
And he's like, well, I'm not planning on going to the store. I'm just going to, and I forgot, there's that service where you can pay somebody to do a task for you, like something TaskRabbit. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm just going to TaskRabbit it and pay somebody to take it over there. I'm not going to go into the store, so I just want to do it over the phone. Can I disconnect over the phone? And the guy wouldn't answer. He kept, just all I want to know is, can I disconnect
and
over
he
the
said,
phone?
You said I could
and
disconnect.
Finally, like after a couple of minutes, the guy's like, yes, you can disconnect. He's like, okay, well, then I want to disconnect. He's like, all right, well, I'll do that, but I don't understand. Blah blah blah. He went back.
And he said, "Can I get a confirmation number?" He says, "I don't have a confirmation number."
When
he finally
got to the end and said, "Okay, I disconnect. You're already disconnected." And he's like, "Okay, can I get a confirmation number?" No, we don't have a confirmation number. He's like, "Well, how will I know?" Well, you'll get your final bill in about 3.5 weeks.
It was.
Did they track down like where the call center was? Was it like a U.S. based call center, or did they?
I don't know. The guy sounded
like a U.S.
sounded
based
American.
One.
He sounded like he had an American accent.
Hmm. It was. Let's see. Let's see. I'll give you a little sample of some of this because it's actually pretty entertaining, and if not, just incredibly painful to listen to. Let's see.
So if you can proceed to the next question. If you have to fill out your form, that's fine. Please proceed to the next question, and we'll attempt to answer that if possible.
So, being that we are the number one provider of internet and TV service in the entire country, why is it that you're not wanting to have the number one rated internet service, number one rated TV service available?
I'm declining to state we're switching providers. Can you please go to the next question?
Okay. So what is it about Astound that's making you want to change to them?
I'm declining to state. Can you please go to the next question so we can cancel our service?
Okay. So, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out here what it is about Comcast service that you're not liking, that you're not wanting to keep. I mean, why is it that you don't want to keep that service?
This phone call is a really actually amazing representative example of why I don't want to stay with Comcast. So can you please cancel our service?
So, I'm trying to help you. Okay.
The way that you can help me is by disconnecting our service. That's how you can
help me. How is that helping you, though?
That's what I want.
Okay, so why is that what you want?
Because that's what I want.
Okay, so, I mean, there has to be some sort of reason behind it. That's what we're trying to find out. We just want to find out. find out what it is that's causing a customer that's been with us for a long time to leave.
Because that's what we want.
Okay? I mean, you've been with us since...
I'm good. I'm just going to wait until you can confirm that we've canceled service, so I'm just going
to
hang
out
here.
Well, you're all standing. You know what? It's disconnected. I'm really sorry to see you go to something that can't give you what we can. But I'd like to thank you very much for being a great part of Comcast. Everyone wonderful.
You skipped several minutes there.
Can you give me a confirmation number for the cancellation?
It was getting painful.
Well, how do I have confirmation that we've got service canceled?
Final statement in about 3 weeks.
A final statement in 3 weeks.
It was a difficult breakup.
That's like an episode of Undercover Boss gone bad. I wonder if that was like the CEO of Comcast.
Not you, it's me. It's a breakup. It's teenage, and it goes on for eight plus minutes. And he says that he only started recording after the call had been going on for 10 minutes.
That his wife started.
So he had to,
painful. How did, so frustrated that eventually he took over the phone.
So how could he even get through 8 minutes without, I mean, there's not a curse word in that. He does not lose, and that's an AOL.
He never loses his temper.
It didn't gadget. Well,
he does work for AOL. He may have had to wait on some dial-up.
When somebody from AOL is complaining about your customer service, you know it's bad.
So, actually, it turns out that was Chad Comcast, and he's just trying to look out. He takes it very personally as a member of the Comcast family.
I am your provider. Yes, they should do an episode of Chad Vader Comcast customer service.
That's probably where he landed after leaving the supermarket.
So, and the guy that canceled the service says he's happy to hear that Comcast is going to address this. But he hopes that it's not in the termination of that guy because he thinks that just terminating the person.
It's probably training. It's probably like someone at some point said, look, you cannot let them leave without having a reason. Like, you must provide a reason. So maybe he got a little bit, overzealous about it. But I bet, it's with the training or with something that Comcast is making him do.
It might be a mixture of he's in retention, and so that's what they're supposed to do. And so they've got certain things they're supposed to cover.
And quotas,
And then this guy takes his job really seriously, and he's just going to – he's going to crack.
Now, what if I come over there? Maybe we could talk about what it would take to keep your cable on, huh? Don't make me come over there.
Look, I have your address right here.
I'll send some quality assurance guys around in just a couple.
All right, 713-526-573. Let us know what we can do for you and, how you're dissatisfied with our service and what we can do to keep you.
We're not going to let anyone hang out. We're just going to keep them on the line.
No, we're going to keep it.
Salim, prepare for a long call.
Why you're ending your call with us.
All right, Groovehouse, who's up?
Up next is the call we lost. It's Salim.
Salim.
Hi.
Hi, welcome to the show. What can we do for you?
Hey, thank you for having me. Hey, I have a Samsung laptop with the Windows 7 Home Premium, and I've had this laptop for about 2 years now, and recently what happens is that whenever I start this laptop, it asks me to either reinstall the operating system or recover from the recovery program, and I have to run this recovery program every single time I start this computer now. I tried shutting down when the operating system comes up. I try to shut down display. Then I restart again. It goes back to the same recovery install.
Okay, well, it sounds to me like there may be a corruption in your operating system install, and that could be a sign of a failing hard drive or something else has happened. I don't know of a quick or easy fix for this. What you're going to have to determine is whether or not this is just a software problem that can be fixed by reinstalling from backup, or if this is going to require a replacement of your hard disk. I mean, all your data, all your operating system is just software. It's just data on platters, and if it's coming up with these kind of errors, something's happening to that data, which means that the integrity of the hardware might be in question.
Yeah, I have to reinstall at least 5 to 6 times now, and I don't want to go ahead further. So it could be more likely a hardware issue rather than software.
You've had to reinstall the operating system 5 or 6 times on this computer?
Yes.
Because of problems like this?
Yes. Because it makes me do that over and over whenever I start the computer.
I assume the computer's no longer under warranty, right?
No.
Does the computer provide any diagnostics that she can run a check maybe against the hardware?
I didn't look for it.
I know that I've only been working with a couple of different brands, but you can start up and go into the you can do a selective startup. Usually when the computer boots up, it says press, you know, a certain key to get to a selective startup, and one of those might be a diagnostic. It's a similar.
Yes.
And if you can run this diagnostic, it's made by the manufacturer, goes through and it checks the hard drive, it checks the RAM memory, it checks the video card, just to see if you have a problem with some of your with a piece of hardware on here. Because to me, it sounds like it's one of two things. Either it's a problem with the hard drive, or it's a problem with the memory that is causing data written to the hard drive to become corrupted. Because bad memory can cause this kind of problem as well.
Okay.
So did you add anything to this computer? Have you added memory or anything to this computer?
No, I had partitioned the hard drive into two drives, and I had all my data in the partition drive and the operating system on the other drive. And so I have all my data, but I couldn't use the computer even not to back up my data. That is the problem I'm running into.
I see. Okay, well, I mean, at least I would, you know what you might want to do is you might want to get a new hard drive and install that as the primary drive and install your operating system on that. Just to see if it'll stabilize this. That'll tell you if it's the hard drive or not. But run the diagnostics first just to see if it detects anything. But it could also be a problem with your partition. Did you use the Windows 7 partition manager, or did you use a third-party partition manager?
Windows 7.
Okay, so you just resized the disk and you put your partition in that way.
Right, yes.
Okay, that's good. Because sometimes third-party partition managers can cause issues, you know, if you don't do it right. It could be because of the partition here. How big did you make the operating system partition?
When the first time when I started the computer, at that point I partitioned the disk, and then I started the install everything. And
yeah, but how big is the disk partition for the operating system?
I think I partitioned like a 400 gig and a 600 gig, and
okay.
I had the data 600 and 400 for the operating.
Okay,
system.
Okay, so that's plenty. I was worried that you might have made the operating system partition too small, and that might have been causing your problem. If you didn't have enough swap space or something like that, it could corrupt the operating system.
There's still a lot of space, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I 400 gig, that's going to be plenty, obviously. I don't know what's causing that. Like I said, it could be, you know, I would run the diagnostic to see if it detects any hardware issues with the memory or the hard drive. And if it doesn't, it's usually a good sign if the system doesn't detect an issue, if the built-in diagnostics don't detect a problem, because they're usually fine-tuned to actually check the disk for read errors and write errors. But if it does detect a problem, then you know that you have to replace the hard drive. But
okay.
If it doesn't detect a problem, then it's really hard to say what it might be. But it could still be memory, because it's very hard to test memory to determine if it's any good. Sometimes, you know, if you have a problem where, you know, it's cropping up with these errors as you use the system, again, it's not an easy thing to diagnose on the air, obviously, but I would certainly try the diagnostics as a first step.
Okay, I will do that.
All right, thanks for your call. Appreciate
I'm sorry.
Oh, wait. What do you got?
I can't disconnect you without telling you why you want to leave.
All right. Have a good evening. Thank you.
You all have a nice.
All right.
Oh, you lit him off too easy. You're too nice. You need to be meaner, despite what Flicted thinks.
Well, then
you can't just let people disconnect from the show.
Well, maybe I should not let people not go to the Geek Gathering. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, Groovehouse is screening calls as a as he likes to do. I think he likes to do it. I don't know.
He lives for it.
I don't know. I think he lives for it less.
Less than what?
Than he used to.
I don't know, man. 19 years, you know.
19 just... years, and he's you know, back in the day, he would show up around an hour before the show, and now everybody's kind of showing up about 10 minutes before the show. So there's a lot more lackadaisical attitude about technology sites these days, I think.
He used to come in and put on his, like, phone answering fingerless gloves and practice picking up the cradle.
Hello? Yeah.
For
hello?
Speed.
Hello? Yeah. It's, you know, checking, 5 minutes of nothing with that. Yeah.
Checking the lilt. Thank you for calling Technology Rights. Would you like to be on the air?
That salt water with lemongrass or whatever.
La 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 la. KPFT.
Red leather, yellow leather. Red leather, yellow leather.
On the air, off the air. On the air, off the air.
The rain in Spain falls mainly on the plane.
Picking up the handset, sibilance.
Sibilance.
The hard drive is dead. The hard drive is dead.
The chair is against
that's
the
wall. That's what I was about to say. John has a long mustache.
So did they use that in the remake of that movie?
I never watched the remake. I don't know.
I didn't either.
I hope so. Yeah. It's a very important piece of that movie.
Yeah.
It's one of the only quotes I remember from it.
All right. Brewhouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, and I am happy to present them to you. This is John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. So I was listening to you guys talk about the Comcast recording, and I was hoping you'd speak a little about what consumer recording options there are available. Because I think it's an empowering statement by, you know, a call like that going viral. Forcing Comcast to kind of own up. So that kind of empowerment tool, what options do consumers have to record their calls?
Well, let's see. I haven't thought about, you know, I will tell you this just as a bit of a historical or a memory-inducing thing. I remember having this microphone that was a little suction cup that hooked up, you know, that you actually hooked under the back of a handset.
Oh, yeah.
It had a wire that went to a cassette deck. And you could record the phone call that way. I thought that was super high tech in 1974, 75. There was this special microphone.
Those are pretty cool, and they still work.
Do they?
On old headsets.
Amazon sells one. It's a telephone microphone suction cup pickup. You can buy them new.
I wonder if it would work on a cell phone, or if it would pick up the vibrations from a phone. But there should be a lot of people are using cell phones now to make phone calls and that sort of thing. So
if you've got an Android, it's built into Google Voice. Like when I make an Android phone call using Voice, there's a little bitty red record button, and I can just click that, and it'll record the phone call.
Is that on outgoing? Because I was looking up for smartphones, and it sounded like Google Voice was only incoming calls that you could record. But this may be
they
old.
Keep making changes to it. They're making a lot of changes with Voice.
There are apps for smartphones, though, that you can buy that will let you record.
Well, let's just calls. So yeah. if we're talking about you know, for your home phone and the handset, you probably would still need one of those suction cup things. You could probably put it into the microphone jack of any recorder or your computer and record it on your PC.
They also make inline ones. So if you know you're going to be doing it, you can plug your phone into it and then plug it into the wall.
Yeah, I would also, just to back up a little bit, maybe Google the legalities, because I know in some states it's illegal unless both parties know.
In Texas, it's legal as long as one person in the party, in the conversation, is aware.
The United States federal government places no restrictions on private citizens recording their phone conversations. That's what it says according to WikiHow.
From the government, the national, but this
federal law.
Yes, some
many states require consent from all involved parties.
Yep, but not Texas.
But not Texas. There are 11 states that require consent from all parties. California, Connecticut, Florida, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and Washington. In addition, the state of Hawaii requires full consent anytime a recording is made inside a private residence. So, but I don't know if that applies necessarily when you're dealing with something like customer service.
So a lot of times they'll say, like, this call is being recorded for quality monitoring and training purposes.
Right.
You know? There is, for Android, there's Record My Call, which you can install, which will deal with all calls. And then for iOS, it looks like there are a few services as well. There's IntCall, there's handsfree.ly, like hands freely. And some of these, though, you've got to pay for on the mobile phone side. But there are some options on the mobile side.
There's plenty of information online, depending on what kind of phone you want to use to make the recordings. But it's becoming, you know, more and more common to hear recorded phone calls in this kind of scenario. I mean, even if you were to just take a microphone and, you know, put the phone on speaker.
Do cassette like the Lewinsky Clinton, cassette tape style
from
the 90s.
Say your micro cassette recorder.
Yeah. Speak into the lapel.
Yeah. What's pretty interesting, too, is that, you know, with federal law, federal is one party, whereas if you have a state that's two party, when you call from one state to another, it's very fuzzy into which laws are actually applicable.
Yeah, and then the other thing you get into with you know, and I don't want to be over generalizing this, but a lot of the call centers, you know, some of them, the support centers, aren't necessarily based in the U.S. You could even be getting into, you know, international type law. And then if you get into voice over IP, I guess that still gets governed.
Well, I wonder if you could be covered by stating at the beginning of the phone call that I am recording this phone conversation.
Yeah, but I think that's.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I know, like, when you're recording, like, if you're recording an interaction with a police officer or something like that, you know, you'd notify them that you're recording out of, you know, be polite.
Even if you're not recording, it may just put them on their best behavior, too. I mean, it could rub some people the wrong way. I could see that, but they also may be a little bit more polite if they know that all this is going down on record. You know, that's the thinking behind being
able
to record.
But if your goal is to catch somebody with their pants down, then don't tell them.
Yeah.
Because
if you're after a good YouTube video, yeah, you might not want to tell them. But if you're after good customer service, you know, letting them know, hey, this is being monitored is probably a good idea.
Yeah, or if you're doing it for political purposes, you want to edit it before you put it on the internet so that you ask them innocuous questions and then you cut new answers in.
All right. Thanks, guys. I'm going to hang up now. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for your call. Bye. All right. 713-526-573. We had some good calls coming in tonight, and we appreciate that. We've got about 30 minutes left in the show this evening. It is the
No Disconnect Show.
So there's next week's show.
Don't disassemble.
Next week will be my last week here.
What?
Before I head off on my trip. Yeah. No, forever, Groove House.
Show's over, got my Wednesday nights back. Oh.
Whoa. That slipped out.
Oh, whoops.
So Groove House is dissatisfaction.
I was almost pulled a Dwight.
He sounded
there.
Pretty happy.
That escalated quickly.
Almost pulled a Dwight.
don't let the door hit you. You know, it's not like, you know, we don't have people lined up because we don't. I'll be here next week. Will be my last show for it's only 2 weeks. I'm coming back on the Tuesday, so I get to do that jet lag show.
Oh, that's not a horrible piece of jet lag. That's a 6 hour flight, 7 hour flight.
Well, it's not that horrible. It's coming over. It's about a 6 hour flight to New York and then a couple hour layover. So it's about 8 hours.
That's still pure time change, though. It's not like you're flying north and south, you know?
No. And, you know, it's the whole, like, I don't ever want to come home kind of trip.
Ooh, that's going to be a horrible shock to go from all nice and chilly and cold climbs. And
yeah, we're coming back in the middle
of
August, the hottest hottest part of the summer in Houston from a place that's about 50 degrees during the day.
Thank you.
Well, at least I get to skip the heat of summer for a couple of weeks, plus work, plus you guys. Payback's a bitch. All right, 713-526-573, if you want to be on the air. And we've got time to take some more phone calls. It's good we had a nice flush, you know, bout of phone calls for the first part of the program. I'm trying to think if anything's come on, what are we up against competing with. Obviously, that Comcast customer service call was the height of the evening. 713-526-573, if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, we are standing by to take your calls. So during the transition period, so when I'm going on vacation, and then Barrett and Flicted are both going to DEF CON. So that's going to be the week of the 6th, right? So you will be gone August the 6th. That'll be the first DEF CON after the first Friday of the month.
Carry the two.
So there'll be a geek gathering at the freak gathering at a geek gathering, and then off to Vegas for them. So on the 6th, allegedly, I have confirmed, or partially confirmed, or at least I've been told that it's a go, that we'll have Lee Hutchinson from, is it Lee Hutchins or Lee Hutchinson? Hutchinson. Lee from Ars Technica, and Dwight Silverman, former co-host of Technology Bites and current Houston Chronicle columnist, filling in.
And I should be there in the studio for it, too.
Peter Hughes will be master of ceremonies. He will cackle, "I have now been put in control, and it's mine, mine, mine." And Groovehouse will go, "Yes, master, yes, you're a And a new cabal will be born.
Well, actually, last year when you went to DEF CON, I think it was...
It was you and Dwight
and,
yeah?
And Lee.
And Lee.
He brought in those cool 3D printed...
That's right. He brought toys. And somebody thought enough to get me one. So
the
I got
coasters.
One. Yeah, the Ars Technica coasters printed on his 3D printers. That was awesome.
So hopefully he's listening and realizes he needs to keep upping his game each year so he gets invited back. And so.
Well, yeah. Get your name right, Mr. Hutchins, if you bring cool stuff.
It's Hutchinson.
It's Hutchins.
It's Hutchinson.
Oh, it is? Well, there's also a Lee Hutchins.
I'm looking at his...
I'm going to cancel that friend request.
It's actually in his... It's
it is Lee Hutchins.
It's Lee underscore R's, if you want
to... Cancel the Hutchins one and just tell him that you need to friend his... You meant to friend his
Oh,
son.
He was Bye, looking right. for Amanda Hutchins kiss. Oh, no. It's Captain Crunch all over again. 713-526-5738. I am gonna miss not being at DEF CON this year, though. I really got to say, 3 years, you know, I know I've... I'm not like an old schooler who's been, you know, way back in history, but it's a good fun. You know, if you have an opportunity to go out to Las Vegas for the annual hacker convention, if you're interested in anything along the lines of just understanding how technology works and how it's vulnerable, if you're really interested, not necessarily in how to take advantage of that or exploit it, but for me, when I go to DEF CON, it's just interesting to learn how things actually work and where the parties are. True enough. Social hacking counts, too. Although, I have to say that for the most part, the parties are pretty lame at DEF CON. I mean, the big outside by the pool DJ thing can be kind of good. But, you know, overall, you're finding one of these little... places that have the rollaway walls that they've built a room out of and a bunch of sweaty male nerds and maybe one or two, you know, women in there.
That's good times. What are you talking about?
But then no more bugs?
There was some good party.
There have been a couple of good ones. No More Bugs was a good party. Yeah, that was a good party.
So no more free bugs?
So it isn't just hacking. They do try to bring up awareness. There's a DEF CON kids track where they teach kids and everything from doing like information security researching to finding bugs. There is a social engineering side.
That's my favorite one, too, is to go to the social engineering hack. They have a competition where they basically put someone in
a glass booth, more or less,
soundproof booth and put them on, and they can dial and they try to basically socially engineer into a company to get
passwords, connection information, data out of them.
And it's surprising how much that kind of stuff gets given up. So if you want to understand, in today's technology age, I think security is a pretty big place. If you know anything about security and can implement it and protect data, then you are a valuable asset to a company. So go ahead.
Who was it last year that... Because I didn't go to that one, but I think it was Mitnick that was speaking, and somebody else was, and he asked if he could contact the company, and the guy was like, "Okay, yeah, go ahead," and he got information he shouldn't have gotten. I don't remember what the company was, though. It was a well-known company.
It was a well-known company, yeah. The CEO was there and gave them permission to go ahead and do it. And so, of course, you got Kevin Mitnick, who's, you know, on the mic, you know, on the phone in front of probably, you know, I don't know, 300 to 1,000 people in this room. And just, yeah, they're just playing into his hands. He's pretty decent at what he does. Also, there's lock picking. There's, you know, physical computing if you want to build things instead of break things. There's definitely that there. There's quite a bit to it. There's all kinds of contests. There's the beverage cooling contraption contest to see who can make a can of beer the coldest the fastest. I think it usually goes in a few seconds. There's a DEF CON shoot where people go out to the desert, shoot high-powered guns. There are barbecues. There's all kinds of stuff going on. So it's much more along the lines of a super huge geek gathering than it is like, you know, a whole bunch of unwashed hackers banging on keyboards, which also does go on.
Yeah, I was going to say there are those as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. 713-526-KPFT. I see we have a call in the queue, so we will go to that, but we have plenty of time. If you want to be on the air, give us a ring. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse, who do we have
up next? We're going to speak with David.
David, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
I have a little quick story. Telecommunications back in World War II, this is kind of a quick, and it was a Mel Brooks comment he made. He was in World War II back in the day, and stationed on a front line at night, he heard some Germans off in the distance playing their music, and he decided to sing a show tune, being a New Yorker from Broadway. So he got out there and with the microphone started singing the Broadway song out through the whole episode. He wasn't listening, and as he ended his skit, he heard complete silence. And the next thing he heard, oh, at that point, he goes to a comment about how he could have ended World War II, but General Patton had a different idea.
All right. Thanks for the information. I didn't understand what he yelled out, though, I'm afraid.
It kind of got cut off, it sounded like.
Did he laugh? Did he choke on his own laughter at his own joke? Or I missed something. All right, let's do Mel Brooks.
Yeah, I'm looking. I'm not finding too much right now. He was a veteran. That is true. He's in the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Dubious.
Sing a show tune.
Oh, yeah.
The Germans loved it.
It's springtime for Hitler and Germany. All right, 713-526-5738. Non sequiturs, we'll take those as well.
I don't know how that was telecommunications exactly.
I don't either.
He used a megaphone or something?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure about the tele part, but the communication part.
Let's see. So 10 kick-ass things Mel Brooks did besides his movies. He created Get Smart. I don't know that I knew that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Conquered Broadway 3 times. Formed the Justice League of Comedy Writers. Discovered Dave Chappelle. I don't know if that's a great thing or not. I did not know he produced David Lynch's The Elephant Man.
I didn't know that either. I saw that.
Huh. He served his country, single-handedly won World War II. Okay, not true, but lots of our boys in uniform might not have made it home without Brooks's help. 17, a young Melvin Kaminsky joined the Army Corps of Engineers and was assigned to the 1104th Engineering Combat Group just in time to be shipped over for the Battle of the Bulge. His unit fought through Europe, building bridges, blah, blah, blah. And according to legend, after the Battle of the Bulge, the Germans began blasting Axis propaganda through loudspeakers. Brooks supposedly set up his own speakers and blasted his impression of Al Jones' Toot Toot Tootsie.
Counter intel.
Yes. All right.
Or counter psyops.
Counter psyops. Yeah, that's counter psyops. Hey, hey. All right. 713-526-5738. I see Groovehouse has a call for us.
Yes. I do.
He does.
Yes, I do.
Groovehouse in the dark. All right. Who is it? What do they want?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Jeff.
Jeff, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening, fellas. Thank you for being here every Wednesday night. I enjoy listening to you. I learn a lot. I have a question about iPhones. I have a iPhone 3 that I bought in 2010.
Wow.
And, okay, so...
Well, it's a classic.
It is a classic.
See, that's the nature of my question. The fact that people are so surprised that, you know, that I don't buy into this idea that you have to have all the new bells and whistles. I'm the guy that likes to drive a vehicle and put about 400,000 miles on it. So why can't that apply to these cell phones? Why do they wear out? Well, let me ask you this. Mine wore out really quickly, like a few months after the extended warranty that I bought was up. And, is it too much to ask for an iPhone to last, or any smartphone to last, you know, a reasonable amount of time? You know, 2.5 years is just not reasonable. Don't you guys agree with that?
Well, I think partially, and I'll let, I think Pete wants to chime in on this too, but I think partially it has to do, I think the phone is fine. It'll work as a phone for as long as you take care of it. If you know, it is a fairly...
And I did, yeah, very much so. A minimal user, never dropped it.
Carry it around in your pocket?
Just on the carpet, maybe. Never put it in water.
Do you carry it around in your pocket?
Oh, sure, I carry it around in my pocket.
So every time your leg hits the ground, bam, 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 and it's talking about complex electronics, you know, certainly that constant shock can cause, you know, a deterioration in the hardware. But, Pete, did you want to say something?
Well, it sounded like you said you got an iPhone 3, and what year did you buy it?
In April of 2010. Yeah, that's when I bought it, and then about 2.5 years after I bought it, and I put it in the drawer, and I was just disgusted with it. I just did without a cell phone for a good while, and it was kind of nice. But
because I had an iPhone 3, I have an iPhone 3GS that I bought in 2008 when it was new. Mm-hmm. And
did you buy this used?
No, I bought it brand new at the Apple store. In another city, but yeah, in an Apple store, yeah. Brand new.
Because I have an iPhone 3GS that I bought in 2008, and my youngest child is still using it. You know, it's passed from me to my teenage son to my nearly teenage daughter, and it's still going strong. So
yeah, there's no built-in there's no built-in hardware obsolescence necessarily. When you say the phone's not working, what's it not doing?
Well, let me finish the story. So that original 2010, to answer your question, the original one I bought in 2010 just totally stopped working. And I took it to the Apple store. And after about three visits of, you know, getting turned down and saying, no, sorry, nothing we can do, I finally got a sympathetic ear with a manager at another Apple store here in Houston. And they decided to replace it with a refurbished iPhone 3.
Okay.
And so I get this phone in January of this year, and they tell me that it comes with a 90-day warranty. And guess what happened with that refurbished phone?
91 days later, boom.
Yeah, about 105 days later. Basically the speaker quits working, so I can't hear. Half the time the slider doesn't work. You know, when you do the little slide at the bottom to bring up the main screen, and so I can make calls, I can send text, but I take it back. I can make calls. Half the time they connect, half the time they don't, and the speaker never works. In other words, I can't hear anything, and so it's just basically dysfunctional. And so I took it back to them and said, "Sorry, 90 days. You're 105 days. Nothing we can do." You know, it's just kind of like the luck of the draw. Whatever manager you get, are they going to be hardliner? Are they going to be sympathetic? They have the discretion to make things right. They just sometimes won't and sometimes will. And so kind of part of what I want to get your input on is would I have a chance to sue them in JP court for the implied warranty of merchantability, a breach of that implied warranty? So I'm trying to get an idea. How long should a person expect an iPhone to last? This gentleman, the young man, you told me what? Oh, 2008. So that's 6 years. So that's great. So is that average?
Well, you know, I think that again, it falls back to, you know, how is the equipment treated, and there, it's going to be very, very hard for you as a consumer to prove that you didn't abuse this phone.
as well as going to, it would be hard for them to prove that I did.
Well, so they can march out any number of iPhone 3s that are, you know, been completely, that are completely functional to this day. I'm sure they, if you're talking litigation on this, I pretty much would just refer you to anywhere else but here, because because I don't know it.
My two bits of free legal advice on it is figure out how much your time while you're pursuing that is worth, and go out and get a newer iPhone or get an Android phone if you're unhappy with the Apple thing. But get, you're buying sort of a used car, or you're buying a 2007 phone. When you get it new or refurbished 3 years in, that just seems like not the best way to get the most out of it.
Yeah, I would side with Pete on this one. I would say, you know, if you had bought something brand new, I mean, just literally out of the box, brand new, current technology, and had those problems.
Which I did in 2010.
You bought an iPhone 3.
It wasn't
3.
Brand new in 2010.
You bought an iPhone 3.
It was brand spanking new out of the box in 2010. They replaced it with a, quote, refurbished phone. And then when you bought the iPhone, I took the manager, the young man that I talked to before I talked to the manager, stated to me that he said, you know, these refurbished phones, they're really brand new iPhones that we just still have in stock when the new ones came out. So they've been sitting on the shelf for 3 years. So really, a refurbished phone is a brand new phone.
Typically, that's true. I would agree with that. But a refurbished phone also has the potential to have been pre-owned. And just reboxed and basically when they say refurbished, you know, I mean, the phone might have gone out of the store for a day or a week or a month, and the person returned it.
Buyer's remorse.
Right. So they returned it for whatever reason, assuming that that person didn't bang into a wall or, you know, cause some other problem with it. We don't know.
Yeah.
And when it comes to sensitive electronics, you know, how you treat it and how it's cared for, it does. It matters.
Well, I
also agree that, you know, if you buy something that's, you know, at the price point that an iPhone should be reliable.
Right.
And you should be able to count on it. But my experience with electronics, experience with electronics is that oftentimes the extended warranty is a great value, and to get it, I've had stuff that wears out and it breaks. Whether it's a digital camera or whether it's a digital phone or whether it's a laptop. I bought a brand new Apple MacBook Air and I got a lemon. I mean, I just got a lemon. The screen went out. The motherboard went out. There's no reason why any of that should have happened. And all of that happened in the first year warranty, thank goodness. But I also bought the extended warranty because I don't want to be left in a lurch. It seems to be partially the nature of the beast. Whether or not you have a class action or a single action lawsuit against Apple for this, I hope you got a lot of money.
Well, no, it's just JP Court. JP Court, it costs about $100 to file and serve them, and then see if they show up. And if they show up, I'll ask for a jury, and we'll impanel six people and see what they think. But, you know, if I want to go that far, I just want to prove a point, because it all ties into what I just can't fathom and swallow is the fact that all this junk merchandise is out there, and people just take it like the tone of what y'all are saying is just accept it. Things break, and it's just easier
to
go on.
I guess
and forget
part
about
it. Part of it is though the experience. I mean, from your perspective, obviously 100% of your iPhones have had issues that they shouldn't.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the vast, vast majority, and I mean, we're talking about millions of iPhones that are out there, there aren't a significant percentage of people having the same experience as you. And so that's why you don't get a lot of traction, is because you make millions of electronics, some percentage are going to be duds. You know, Jay mentioned it about his MacBook Air.
Yeah.
Most people who have a MacBook Air are very happy with them, but there are people who get duds, and you can go look online and find people who got some duds, but it's not the overwhelming majority. It's not like Yugos, where people bought those cars and the vast majority of them were crap.
So, you know,
I hear what you're saying. I appreciate your budget. So how long should a smartphone last? What's the industry? What's acceptable? What's reasonable for, say, any smartphone to last?
I've got an Android.
With excellent care. with excellent.
I've got an Android phone that's still out there, a Samsung Galaxy that I gave to someone to use, as you know, and that's probably pushing 5 years and going strong. I don't see any reason.
My 3GS is 6 years old and still going.
You know, yeah. On the other hand, my, go ahead. I'm not, such a fanboy that not willing to admit that I've had problems. The iPhone 5, which I have the iPhone 5, had a known problem with the power button, and the power button would stop working, and it took Apple for a while to acknowledge it, but now they're replacing those. Mine failed. And I had to get it working before they finally got around to the recall, but so I had to pay for that, so I was out of luck. So things do break, and when it comes to sensitive electronics, if it's taken care of, it's well taken care of, it's kept dry, it's yep. not beaten up, it's not banged yep. around, and it was made properly and it had good quality control when it was made. 5, 6, 7 years. What I find with technology is that the hardware can work just fine for a long time. Like I've got a laptop, an old Pentium, like 4 laptop that had XP on it, was brand new. Still runs like a champ. It's just underpowered to run modern software. It's not a good online experience yep. because the ancillary technology that it's used to interface with exceeds the hardware's capability to work properly. That being said, a phone should still be able to make phone calls. The speaker should work, but maybe the web browsing is a little better. It's not capable of getting on the faster network. So in my mind, technology, the hardware is always left behind mm-hmm. by the software and by the data connections. So even though it's working perfectly, it's just not capable of running modern software or connecting to modern services. That's the problem that you run into.
One piece of advice I would give people on iPhones is generally, especially if you have a choice, if you can get one that's the S, that's the second year of the model, that usually is better. You know, it's like you had a problem with iPhone 3 and Jay had a problem with an iPhone 5 because the S usually is pretty much the same thing with the bugs worked out, with a little kick. They give it a better camera. They change out a couple parts, but everything else has already been going for a year, and you tend to end up with at least that. I think that is part of why I've had better results.
Yeah, you pay a premium for being an early adopter sometimes. So you get the first generation of something, and they can be flaky. But I've had bad experiences with just about every, manufacturer I can think of. Dell will put out a batch of laptops and they'll all have bad hard drives because poor quality control, and they get a batch of hard drives.
Yeah.
And I work with them a lot. But it seems to me to be the nature of the beast. And yeah. and as Pete mentioned, how much of your time and how much of your effort is it worth it to go after the manufacturer and demand satisfaction and see what you can, if you can extract a pound of flesh? Maybe you can, but if it's a matter of getting a recoup on a $400 purchase, that as opposed to spending months or years trying to chase it down in courts, is that worth $400 to me? How much are my, it's hard to say. I'm not a litigious person myself, and maybe that's unfortunate that most consumers aren't.
Well, no, I'm not either for the most part, but, I have sued people in the past when I've had to, and I'm 52, so twice I've had to sue people, and I've won both times. So, I make sure that I've got a good case. But the point is, it's just a matter of fairness,
I understand. Listen, we're out of time, and I can't make that any clearer. I personally have no patience for litigiousness, but that's me. All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Grovehouse.
And he's ready to go home.
Hungry.
All right. Tune in next week for more Technology Bites. We'll see ya.
Tune in for the final episode with Jay Lee before he goes on vacation.
formed on September the 14th, 2001, the ANSA Coalition campaigns today against U.S. intervention in Latin America, the Caribbean, the Middle East, and Asia, while speaking out for civil rights and for social and economic justice for working and poor people inside the United States. ANSA, which stands for Act Now to Stop War and End Racism, has led some of the largest demonstrations in the U.S., bringing out millions to speak out against war in Iraq and Afghanistan, to speak out for Palestine, and to demand the U.S. economy change to benefit people rather than corporations and war profiteers. You can learn more about the ANSA Coalition, join the mailing list, and how to get involved at ANSACoalition.org. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, KPFT.org online, Facebook.com/KPFT Houston, at KPFT on Twitter.
Where am I?
You've died, ma'am.
Are you?
Yes. I'll be deciding your final destination.
You mean heaven or...
Exactly. Now let's see. Tell me, what good things have you done in your life?
Well, I helped pull people from a burning building once, and I helped develop a vaccine that saved children.
Well, okay. Those are good. What else you got?
Huh. Let me think. Oh, I donated my car to KPFT.
Oh, now that's wonderful. Up you go.
Looking to do something really nice? Donate your car to KPFT. You help KPFT provide great programming, and you get a tax receipt. Call 855-KPFT-CAR.